Show Me the Science with Professor Luke O'Neill.
Hello, Luke O'Neill here, and welcome to my Show Me the Science podcast. Now, as I've been saying, I'm always happy to get requests. And this week, Liz Shine, thanks very much, Liz, sent me an email and she said to me, would I cover the brain immune system axis? Now, I've kind of covered this before a couple of times. There's a very famous nerve called the vagus nerve, which connects the brain to the immune system. But there's been a breakthrough, and Liz, I think, might have come across this publication a few weeks ago. Scientists have discovered, get this, the rheostat in the brain, which can be turned up or down and affects your whole body's inflammatory response. And this is quite remarkable, because what the future of this is, actually, you can turn on inflammation or turn it off by tweaking a particular region in the brain. And it's in the brain stem. The scientists involved have found these special nerves in the brain, and they're able to tweak them in various ways. They use therapeutic drugs, I suppose, that are still in development. They can stimulate them with electrodes, and they can suppress inflammation in the body or ramp it up. Now, of course, it's one step at a time territory. It's in mice mainly, it must be said. But still, I was interviewed about this for an American magazine to get my reaction, because I work on inflammation. And I said, yep, if this pans out, this could be tremendous. Because can you imagine a disease like ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, psoriasis? All of these involve inflammation, as anybody who listens to me knows. And the inflammatory process goes off kilter and attacks your own tissues, and they're horrible diseases. There are some anti-inflammatory treatments out there, of course, already that do make some difference to people. But this area is a whole new vista. Could we control these different diseases? Now, we've known for a long time that the immune system talks to the brain. And the best example we have there is if you get sick and if you get the flu or a cold or a virus, you feel rotten and you want to lie down, pull the duvet up, watch daytime TV or whatever it is, and drink flat 7-Up. That's called sickness behavior. And that's because the immune system makes molecules that goes to your brain and makes you feel rough and makes you feel flu-y and gives you all those symptoms. And in fact, it's an evolved thing. It evolved to get you away from the herd. Let's say we are herd animals as a species. We're very social. And let's say I get infected. To make sure I don't infect you, I go away into my cave in the Stone Age or whatever, and I lie down and I feel rotten, and then eventually I beat the infection and I go back out again. It stops me spreading the nasty infection to other people. Other animals do this, by the way. They'll hide away if they're infected to stop the disease spreading. And a little bit's known about this. We know kind of what's involved. Things called cytokines get made by the immune system, and they can affect behavior. And it is a behavioral response, because you don't feel like socializing. In fact, interestingly, it's like a type of depression you get, really. And one of the big things I've spoken about before is there's a link from the immune system to depression that could be very interesting. If you can imagine, if this goes off kilter as well, it could provoke persistent symptoms of wanting to stay away from people and being antisocial and feeling rotten. And of course, that's a feature of depression. So it's been known for a while, this connection. But now this breakthrough really begins to pin down exactly what's going on. And of course, the reason why it's so important is all these diseases, as I mentioned, the autoimmune diseases, can we get better treatments for those? And what they found, these scientists, it was Dr. Charles Zucker and Dr. Hao Jin. They were in Columbia University. They found a part of the brain and neurons in the brain stem that seem to be involved in driving inflammation or blocking inflammation in your body, in different parts of the body. And they did this. They started by infecting animals, first of all, and then they began measuring different parts of the brain using very elaborate imaging systems. You can image the brain very cleverly with things like magnetic resonance imaging, and they noticed after infection a particular part of the brain stem lit up, suggesting that part was being turned on. And of course, the brain stem is interesting anyway. It's kind of primordial part of your brain. The brain stem controls breathing, it controls heart rate, you know, and if you get damage to your brain stem, it's extremely serious, you die. And it's in this part of the brain, so it must be very ancient. They reckon the brain stem is one of the more ancient parts of the brain. And of course, what they noticed was this part of the brain, in the brain stem, links into the vagus nerve, which I've mentioned before. Now, the vagus nerve comes out of your brain, it splits in two and connects to your heart, your lungs, your stomach, your intestines. It's a major highway, a neuronal pathway that comes out of the brain. And this was known to connect to these organs. So, for example, the vagus nerve will help with digestion because it gets your stomach to release enzymes, for instance. And that was known for decades, actually. And there had been evidence, as I've mentioned before, on a previous podcast, if you can modulate the vagus nerve and stimulate it, they could see an anti-inflammatory effect. using special electrodes. And a guy called Kevin Tracy was involved in this. And a very important scientist called Paul Peter Tack, who's a good friend of mine, he's a rheumatologist. He did the pioneering work on some of this, actually. And Paul Peter is a big advocate for vagus nerve stimulation. And there was evidence in rheumatoid patients, actually, that Paul Peter did. If you activate the vagus nerve, you can suppress joint inflammation. And that's been reproduced. It's a very interesting phenomenon. And what this advance has done is that they kind of discovered where the vagus nerve plugs into the brain. And that's the important breakthrough. And what they showed as well was that if you block this pathway, so you can block it in a way, in this specific part of the brain, again, you can measure changes in the inflammatory process. And then the other thing that adds to that, us scientists love to see progress, you see, and things usually get more complex the more things we discover. There were two tracks coming out. One was pro-inflammatory and one was anti. And they could stimulate the pro-inflammatory part. This is in mice now. And they got 3 times higher inflammation in the body. The body of the mice began to make more inflammatory factors, inflammatory cytokines. On the other hand, if they could trigger the other part, they could decrease inflammation by 70%. And that's why they're using the word rheostat. So, you know, you can turn, the rheostat gets turned up or down. If you turn it up, you see more inflammation. If you turn it down, you block it. Now, clearly, when they're infecting the mice, that was a good thing to do because this is part of the immune response. And they could infect the mice with bacteria, ramp it up. They noticed this bit was being ramped up and that was boosting inflammation. Because remember, inflammation is good for you. It's designed to help you fight infection. In fact, as I've mentioned before, inflammation involves things like redness. That's because blood rushes in to the infected site. You get swelling because white blood cells leave the blood and go into the tissue and they bring some plasma with them as they go in to fight the bad guy. So the inflammatory process is a normal process that helps us fight infection. It also gets triggered if you sprain your ankle, any tissue injury. Again, the immune system goes in to repair the damage. And of course, they could show this with the bacteria, and that was the experimental system that they used. And then using very subtle imaging, they could spot the two tracks coming out, one pro-inflammatory, the other anti, and then they could finely tune each track by dialing it up or down and control inflammation. And it's remarkable stuff when you think about it. And they did this using genetics. They could knock out certain genes. They also had therapeutic agents, small molecules, drugs that could modulate this. Now, what they showed then that was even more impressive, I think, is it's the best part of this publication, which, by the way, came out in Nature. And as I often mention, look where things are published. If something's published in the Wicklow People, not that I'm knocking the Wicklow People, but it mightn't be the best science, you know. If you see the stuff published in an eminent journal, it's probably correct. And this is in Nature. And what they showed was, if you trigger the anti-inflammatory process, those mice did not get ulcerative colitis. Now, there's a way of provoking colitis in mice. In fact, there's maybe as many as 10 different ways of doing this, using chemicals, using bacteria. And if they trigger the anti-inflammatory network, as it were, the neural network, the mice didn't get colitis. And that was some of the evidence. Now, can you imagine this? You're triggering a part of the brain and there's no inflammation in the gut. Now, imagine if that works in humans. And ulcerative colitis, very serious disease. As I say, there are some treatments, but can you imagine if we can tweak the brain now to suppress ulcerative colitis? Wouldn't that be tremendous? Now, one slight downside, they noticed that if you tweak the anti-inflammatory part, they were more susceptible to salmonella. Now, that they challenged the mice with salmonella, a bacteria. And that makes sense because, obviously, if you can imagine for a minute, you're tweaking the anti-inflammatory network. Yeah, you can't fight bacteria as well because you can't trigger the inflammatory process to help you fight bacteria. Now, what would that mean? Well, again, that can be measured, I suppose, and studied. But that's one slight caveat. If you tamper a bit too much with these things, you might increase risk of infection, which, by the way, is the bane of my life. I mean, we're always trying to develop new anti-inflammatories, and often we see a risk of infection, given the normal role of inflammation in those processes. But they could distinguish this. They were able to sort of tweak it in a way that may not increase risk of infection, but still, that's a slight concern. The second thing that they mention is, what about humans? Now, as I mentioned, it's all done in mice. We can't do experiments in humans. You can't stimulate someone's brain stem just in case there's some horrible side effect. So as ever, we try to avoid using animals, but we do use them in a limited way just initially. But the good news is there's an analogous set of neurons in human. And they could map the neuronal pathways in human, and lo and behold, brainstem lines coming out, one likely to be pro-inflammatory, one anti, and they seem to be in humans as well. And that gives us hope that we could target these pathways in the humans, very importantly. And I think that the big add-on here is the two neural network lines are coming out, one being anti and one pro, and then we can just modulate them and then see how this would work. And I saw an interview with Zucker and Jin, and they were obviously very excited about this, as most scientists are when they make a breakthrough. And to make an analogy, they said, you know, in fact, these guys had previously worked on the sense of taste. Now, obviously, if you eat something and a neural network goes into your brain and says that's bitter or sweet or salty, there are different lines of neurons. So they were looking for this kind of thing in the inflammatory process. And lo and behold, they find one line of neurons that says inflammation and one that says suppress inflammation. So they use the analogy of taste. We have neural networks for sweet and savory and so on. Equally, there's now neural lines now that say inflammation or not, as the case may be, in the body. And remember, it's a two-way street, because if you're infected, say in your hand or somewhere, this will trigger the net to go to the brain to trigger inflammation back down into the hand, you know. And then, of course, when the inflammation begins to go away, and it goes away eventually, it's the anti-inflammatory net that gets triggered. And that's a natural thing, you see. And it's all about communication then from the body into the brain through these neural networks. And where the immune system comes in, it looks like, is the immune system is making the molecules to trigger these lines. The anti and pro-inflammatory networks are being triggered by factors made by the immune system. Now, as ever with these things, it's causing excitement, first of all. And secondly, more research. We never sleep with scientists. There's always something else to be doing. And now lots of labs will jump on this, including my own potentially, and we'll try to understand more about this. The ultimate goal being to precisely tweak this part of the brain to allow for a suppression of inflammation. And the dream would be, let's say you have colitis, you begin to develop symptoms, tweak the rheostat in your brainstem and ramp it down. Wouldn't that be tremendous? And the trick would be not to ramp it down too much, because then you might get infections. And it's all about that volume control on the rheostat is ultimately where this is going to go. So watch this space. It's a real development on what was building on vagus nerve work, now into these neural networks coming out of the brainstem to control inflammation in the body. And as I say, as ever, more work will be needed, but watch this space very closely. So there you go, Liz. I hope you got something out of that. I'm sure your interest is stemming from diseases that you're familiar with. And as I say, hopefully this research will ultimately benefit patients, which is why we're doing all this in the first place. And thanks as ever for listening. And of course, my podcast is a News Talk production, available for download every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts. And thanks for listening.